Welcome to Grand Rapids Daily. It is Wednesday, May 13th, and we are looking at a pretty gray start to the day here in West Michigan.
Yeah, definitely a chilly morning. We're sitting at about 45 degrees right now, but with the wind out of the northwest, it feels closer to 39. It's fully overcast out there.
And it's going to stay that way for most of the afternoon. We might hit a high of 54 later today, but definitely keep a jacket handy if you're heading out tonight. We're looking at clear skies eventually, but a low dipping all the way down to 37 degrees by tomorrow morning.
The good news is this is just a brief spring dip. We've got a significant warming trend moving in right after this, and we should be seeing temperatures climbing back into the 70s by the weekend. Perfect timing for getting outside.
Absolutely. Today on the show, we're looking at a major bipartisan push from Michigan lawmakers in Washington to block Chinese-connected vehicles from U.S. roads.
Plus, a heated debate in Lansing over a new housing package that could strip some zoning control away from local governments to spur development. Let's get into it.
We're starting today with a significant legislative move coming out of Washington, driven directly by Michigan's congressional delegation. Representatives John Moulinar, a Republican, and Debbie Dingell, a Democrat, have introduced the Connected Vehicle Security Act.
And this is a bill with a very clear, aggressive objective. It aims to completely prohibit the importation, manufacture, and sale of any connected vehicles, as well as their software and hardware that are linked to foreign adversaries. Specifically, they are targeting China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran.
The timeline they've laid out is tight, especially in automotive manufacturing terms. The bill sets an effective date of January 1, 2027 to ban the software components, and then by January 1, 2030, the hardware prohibitions would kick in.
The core argument here is twofold. First and foremost, they're framing this as a critical national security issue. Modern cars aren't just mechanical machines anymore. They are essentially rolling computers. Lawmakers are warning that these connected vehicles act as massive data collection devices.
Right. They gather incredibly detailed information as you drive. We're talking about GPS location data, details about local infrastructure, camera feeds, and even sensitive personal information about the drivers and passengers. The fear is that if a vehicle's software is controlled by a company tied to the Chinese government, that data could be accessed, aggregated, and exploited.
Representative Moulinar was quite blunt about this. He pointed out that allowing vehicles controlled by the Chinese Communist Party onto American roads is an unacceptable risk to both national security and the personal privacy of Americans.
But there's also a massive economic component to this, which is exactly why you're seeing such strong bipartisan support from Michigan lawmakers specifically. Beyond the espionage concerns, there is a very real fear about the survival of the domestic auto industry.
Exactly. Chinese automakers receive heavy subsidies from their government. This allows them to artificially lower the prices of their vehicles, particularly electric vehicles, to a point where American manufacturers simply cannot compete on price. If those cars are allowed to flood the U.S. market, it could devastate the industrial base here in Michigan. We've already seen this exact scenario play out in Europe, where cheap Chinese EVs have aggressively captured market share over the last few years. Representative Dingell noted that the U.S. needs to be proactive rather than reactive to prevent a similar hollowing out of our automotive sector. It's worth noting that this bill doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's actually designed to codify and expand upon executive actions that the Biden administration has already taken to restrict Chinese connected vehicle technology. So why the need for a separate piece of legislation if the executive branch is already acting on it?
It's about permanence. Executive orders can be reversed, delayed, or watered down by future administrations. By turning these restrictions into federal law, it makes them much harder to undo. It sends a permanent signal to the global market, especially with shifting political winds and upcoming U.S.-China trade summits.
It also mirrors efforts happening over in the Senate. Just last month, in April 2026, Senators Alyssa Slotkin, another Michigan Democrat, and Bernie Moreno, an Ohio Republican, introduced a very similar bipartisan bill. So there is a unified cross-chamber push from Rust Belt politicians to get this done.
The pushback, or at least the concern from some consumer advocates, is what this means for affordability.
If you completely block a major source of low-cost vehicles, do you artificially inflate the price of cars for American consumers in the long run?
That's the fundamental trade-off. The argument from the bill's sponsors is that the long-term cost of losing the domestic auto industry, combined with severe national security risks, far outweighs the short-term benefit of cheaper cars. But it does mean Americans might have fewer and potentially more expensive options when shopping for an EV.
And automakers themselves will have to rapidly adjust their global supply chains to ensure they aren't relying on any hardware or software from the targeted countries by those 2027 and 2030 deadlines. It's a massive regulatory undertaking for an industry that is already in the middle of a complex transition to electric power.
Let's bring things back to the state level. Over in Lansing, there is a massive fight brewing over how to solve Michigan's ongoing housing shortage. It's a fundamental clash between the state government's push for more density and the traditional power of local municipalities to control their own zoning.
This all centers around a bipartisan package of 9 bills, specifically House Bills 529 through 5232 and 5581 through 5585. They're collectively being called the Housing Readiness Package. The explicit goal is to aggressively remove local zoning barriers that developers say make it too difficult and too expensive to build. The details of these bills are quite sweeping, and they would radically change how land is used in Michigan. For example, they would prohibit local governments from setting minimum lot sizes larger than 1,500 square feet. They would also cap minimum home size requirements at just 500 square feet. And perhaps the most controversial piece, the legislation mandates that duplexes, as well as accessory dwelling units, often called granny flats or ADUs, must be permitted by right in all residential zones. That means local zoning boards couldn't arbitrarily block them if they meet basic building codes. The state is also looking to speed up the bureaucracy side of construction. The bills propose a strict 60-day shot clock for local governments to process housing applications. If a city or township doesn't make a decision within 60 days, the project is essentially greenlit by default. Plus, they want to limit parking mandates to just one space per unit, which significantly lowers construction costs. Unsurprisingly, local government organizations are fighting this tooth and nail. The Michigan Municipal League and the Michigan Townships Association are strongly opposing the entire package. Their primary argument is that this is a heavy-handed, one-size-fits-all approach mandated from Lansing. Right, they argue that what works for downtown Grand Rapids or Detroit doesn't necessarily work for a rural township in Kent County. Local officials are raising serious concerns about infrastructure capacity. If the state forces a municipality to allow higher-density housing on every lot, who pays for the upgrades to the sewer systems, the water lines, and the roads to support those extra residents? That's the crux of the issue. A township supervisor might say, "We aren't inherently against duplexes, but our current wastewater treatment plant literally cannot handle the extra capacity." The local organizations feel these bills completely ignore those ground-level engineering realities. On the flip side, housing advocates and developers argue that local control is exactly what created the housing crisis in the first place. They point to decades of restrictive zoning, like large minimum lot sizes and outright bans on anything other than single-family homes, as exclusionary tactics that have artificially choked off the housing supply.
And the data shows Michigan is desperately short on what's called missing middle housing. We have plenty of large single-family homes in the suburbs and large apartment complexes in the cities, but very few duplexes, triplexes, or smaller starter homes that middle-income families can actually afford to buy.
The proponents of the bills argue that state-level preemption is the only viable way to force communities to accept this necessary density, because local boards will almost always bow to neighborhood opposition. But critics counter that simply changing zoning laws won't magically make housing affordable, because it doesn't address the underlying high costs of construction materials and labor.
It's a fascinating debate because it scrambles the usual political lines. You have some free market conservatives aligning with progressive housing advocates to deregulate zoning, while local officials from both parties are banding together to protect their municipal authority.
it really comes down to who you trust more to manage neighborhood growth. The state legislature aiming for a macro-level increase in housing supply across Michigan, or local city councils trying to manage the micro-level impacts on their specific streets and utilities. We'll be watching closely to see if this package can actually make it through the House.
All right, we need to take a quick break from the State House and hit a few more local stories making headlines today.
Let's run through the roundup.
First up, if you head down to Kalamazoo, you're going to notice some sudden changes to their downtown parking rules. Park Kalamazoo just announced they're rolling out 30 minutes of free on-street parking at all paid spaces.
And they're also ending on-street parking enforcement at 5 p.m. across all zones and increasing the maximum time limits from 90 minutes to 3 hours or more. What's wild is this comes just 6 weeks after they overhauled the entire system on April 1st to introduce demand-based pricing.
Yeah, it seems the initial rollout faced some severe backlash. The city says these adjustments, which will be fully active within the next 3 weeks and last through fall 2027, are a direct response to feedback from frustrated business owners and residents.
Moving up to Fruitport, a local mom is leading a grassroots effort to bring digital safety curriculum to her community schools, partnering with the nonprofit organization Protect Young Eyes. Protect Young Eyes was actually founded back in 2015 by Chris McKenna. They advocate for phone-free schools and device-level accountability. They even helped co-author Utah's Child Device Protection Act. The focus here is on proactive education. Rather than just taking devices away, the goal is to give parents and educators the tools to navigate things like online predators and the mental health impacts of social media. It's a localized push for a very national conversation.
And that is going to wrap things up for us today on Grand Rapids Daily.
Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And stay warm out there tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with more news from across West Michigan. Have a great Wednesday.